This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Greater Cincinnati has been focusing its attention on all of the preparation and events leading up to tomorrow's All-Star Game. But our area is hosting another national sports competition this week. The 2015 U.S. Rowing Club National Championships begin July 15th at Harshill Lake in Claremont County. An estimated 2,000 rowers are expected to compete in the five-day regatta. Here for a preview of the rowing championships are A.J. Dominic, U.S. Rowing Events Manager, Jim Comadeca, Board Chair of the Claremont Convention and Visitors Bureau and co-owner of Green Kayak Adventures, and Leela Spriggs, Events Director with the Claremont County Convention and Visitors Bureau. A.J., start off by telling us, what is the U.S. Rowing National Championship? How big an event is this in the world of rowing?
Annually, this is one of our two largest events. Between this and our Masters Nationals, they kind of flip-flop, usually depending on where Masters Nationals is held. And really, over the last 4 years, this event has really grown and sustained that growth. This regatta used to be right around 1,000 entries, and the last 4 years, including this year, has been consistently closer to 1,300-1,400 each year. It's really a good mix as far as the field of competitors. You've got a lot of junior crews who are just coming off of their spring seasons and going through their summer training. But you've also got college programs that do their summer development camps, and you've got a few pre-elite camps and things like that. So it's a wide variety as far as the field goes, but it's good competition for a full week.
Now, how many other places has the national championship been held, AJ?
It travels around. We usually hold it in the same location for a year or two. So it's often held in Camden. We've held it in Indianapolis, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So it's been to a couple of other venues and going back even further. I know Syracuse, New York used to hold it in the past. So it's part of one of our oldest regattas. So it's traveled around a little bit.
Now, what makes Harshill Lake an ideal venue for this event?
Really, one of the biggest advantages Harsha has is just having a seven-lane course to begin with. It's a really well set up, naturally set up course. It's protected for the majority of the course. It's got a nice, compact but spacious viewing area right around the beach area at East Fork State Park. So it makes for a good spectator, and it makes the event feel more lively and busier. Because everyone's in one spot. So it really makes for a great atmosphere around the event.
Leela, what kind of challenges did Claremont County have to overcome to land this?
Well, the beach house at Harsha had been underwater for a number of years. Springs had not been kind. So infrastructure needed to be updated, which the state stepped in, and we have a brand new bathhouse out there. The CVB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, has purchased launches, wakeless launches specifically for rowing. The state also, we've gotten a grant from the state. We have new docks. So things are all polished and new and shiny out there. It's going to be really exciting.
Jim, how big a deal is this for the county from a visitor's standpoint?
This is significant. And on the at the same time as the All-Star Game, it's an amazing pickup for our region. We're expecting in the neighborhood of 10,000 visitors. In the ballpark, about 2,000 athletes, but about 10,000 visitors into the county. Every hotel is in the county is completely filled. We're filling outlying hotels that we can get our hands on in light of the excitement with the All-Star Game this week, too. So it's significant.
I've heard that the hotel rooms have been booked for as far as a year in advance for this. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. These type of events, once they're on the books, having been a parent of a swimmer, which is very similar events, you have to book a year or two in advance to make sure you're getting your spot. And yeah, they've been booked for months and months.
And what kind of economic impact are we expecting from this?
We're expecting up in a neighborhood of about $2 million impact into the county, which is very significant
that
for
is.
Us.
Leela, what kind of preparations? You're starting to talk about some of the things that the county's been doing to get ready for this. What are some of the other preparations that you've been making for this event?
We've got all sorts of people on board. We have ODNR is going to have a large presence there. We have the Mounted Search and Rescue. We're going to have people on horseback patrolling the outer parking lots, making sure that folks are taken care of and nobody has any issues. You know, if they do, they can go to a person on a horse. How cool is that? And let me see. Oh, I don't know. Just putting everything in place. A lot of people have jumped in for sponsorships as far as lunches and tents and, you know, vendors and food. And,
and, you know, a really shout out has to go to the folks at the East Fork State Park. They have been just incredible as far as finding space for all the boats that are coming in, taking care of the parking, you name it. They have been 110% behind this event.
And AJ, from your standpoint, from the rowing club standpoint, what do you do to get ready for these national championships?
Yeah, our team is all hands on deck for this and all of our other major events. It's really an exciting time right now. We're just coming off of a great youth nationals, so we're looking to carry that momentum into this event. And you know, we've got an exciting thing that kind of ends this event. We have a college fair that allows the athletes to meet with college coaches for recruiting purposes and stuff. So having that capstone will just kind of cap off a really great week of racing.
Is rowing a big college sport, AJ?
It is. It's really why we've seen the growth in this event. It's because the youth athletes are seeing the sport as a gateway to not just to get to college, but to get into colleges that really wouldn't be options. You know, it's real big with the Ivy League schools. Really well-known, highly reputable schools put a lot of focus on rowing. So this is a great way for athletes to get in front of the coaches and with the college fair actually meet the coaches. But the sport in general has really just grown exponentially because of the collegiate rowing aspect of it.
Where do the rowers come from for this event? Is this international? Are you getting people from all over the world?
Any international crews, but they are spread all over the country. We've got Florida, we've got Connecticut, we've got Virginia, we've got crews from the West Coast, Missouri. So, you know, being in the middle of the country, I think, really allows a lot of people to come, even people we don't see when we're more on the East Coast. So it's a really well spread out feel. You know, there are some years where we'll see one or two clubs that just kind of put in a lot of entries to try to dominate the field. And this year, it's a lot more of an evenly spaced field, which is great to see and should make the team point standings pretty exciting.
And AJ, is this a sport that women have taken to at the college level?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's with the NCAA having women's rowing as a varsity sport. Again, that's really where the growth really comes from. It's really a great way to get a scholarship. I believe I saw an article a couple of weeks ago saying that one in three high school rowers gets to go to college for rowing. So those odds aren't similar in any other sport that you would think of. So it's really a great gateway, and Title IX has created a great opportunity for women's rowing.
Lila, I always enjoy watching Olympic rowing. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. They make it look so easy and so effortless, but that's not really the case, is it? I mean, this is really a very demanding sport, isn't it?
It is. They say that you burn the same amount of calories that you would playing two back-to-back basketball games.
Wow.
In the 7 minutes that it takes to row the 2,000 meters of a race.
That's amazing. So these are, AJ, these are athletes who are in really good shape, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. When I started this in college, I'd never done a sport like this before, and I immediately lost 15 pounds just from running.
You signed me up.
Yeah.
Jim and me both. Now,
yeah, so it's a great full-body workout.
Yeah, that's the thing that people don't realize, isn't it, Lila? This is a full-body work. Most people think this is just the arms that you've got working, but this is
right.
The entire body. It's very aerobic, isn't it?
It's a full-body workout. It uses all your major muscle groups. It's aerobic. It's low or no impact. And it's the only sport that you can win sitting on your butt going backwards.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
You know, I encourage people when they get out there to try to take a look at some of these racing skulls, because I was, as the non-rower in the group, shocked at how small they really are and relatively unstable.
Yeah.
Unless you know what you're doing.
Well, Lila, what are the different types of boats that are involved in rowing?
There are singles. There are doubles. There are pairs. doubles being each person has two oars, a pair being each person only has one. There are quads, which is four people in a boat, each one has an oar. There are fours, which are four people in the boat. They only have one oar, but they have a coxswain. There's also a subcategory of a four without a coxswain. There's eights, which are eight people in a coxswain in a boat. So,
what's a coxswain?
Coxswain is that little person in the back who, for the most part, probably has a has an attitude.
Is this the person saying stroke?
Yeah.
Okay, that's,
you know,
a coxswain.
They like coxswains that are bossy little people. The smaller and the bossier, the better.
What are the other positions in the boat?
Just generally speaking, it's oarsmen or oarswomen, and you know, when you're in the boat a lot of times as a coxswain, and you refer to people by their seat number, so you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, something like that. So there are things out there that talk about the personality of a boat and where people are and what that says about them that rowers like to have fun with. But yeah, generally speaking, you're referring to people by their seat number.
So we've talked about the different types of boats that are involved, AJ. What are the different types of rowing? There are different ways of using the paddles, aren't there?
So generally, you can either be a sweep rower or a sculler. Sweep rowing are the boats that Lila was talking about, where each rower has one oar, usually goes off to one side of the boat. And then sculling, each rower has two oars that go out on both sides of the boat.
Now, the boats are called shells, AJ. Is that right?
That's right.
What are they made of, and what are some of the typical lengths of the different boats?
Most of them nowadays are made out of carbon fiber. It's really amazing how light these boats are. So to give you an idea, an eight-person shell will be somewhere around 60 to 63 feet long, but it'll only weigh about 200 pounds. So it's really amazing what they've been able to do. Both in engineering and things like that, to make these boats just super lightweight and really faster than they've ever been in the past.
So the boats of yesteryear were much different then.
Yeah, I know. You know, when I was rowing for a club team, we had an older shell and it had wooden gunnels, and you wouldn't believe the difference. Even having just wood on the gunnels compared to just an all carbon fiber boat, you can feel the weight difference for sure. So, you know, and way back when, you can find beautiful old rowing singles a lot of times that are completely made out of wood that look gorgeous, but I'm sure are very heavy.
Yeah. Jim, how big has rowing become in this area? It seems like there's a big rowing community, a big paddling community in the Cincinnati area.
There really is a significant history here, too. I mean, you go back to Harshaw Lake, we just invested in updating the starting blocks and the docks and everything. And the original set came from the 1984 Olympics. That's where they were from, the ones that were out at Harshaw Lake. So that history goes way back with the Cincinnati Jewers, Junior Rowing, the Claremont Club. It just continues to grow.
Lila, are there various categories for the rowers? I mean, you have like weight classes and age categories and that kind of thing when you go into these competitions?
They do. They have lightweight rowers, both men and women. They have junior rowers. They have intermediate rowers. They have senior rowers. They have elite rowers. And then you get into master rowers, which is anybody over the age of 22 is a master rower. I myself am a master rower. It has nothing to do at all with ability.
Okay.
It's totally an age classification.
So even I could be a master rower.
There you go.
Well, that's the point. I mean, rowing is something that just about anybody can get into, right?
If you can get in the boat, you can row until, you know, they cart you out of it.
AJ, it's interesting too that in rowing, it's you don't measure things in miles per hour. Is that right? You measure it in SPM. Is that right?
Yeah, people generally talk about rating as strokes per minute, and that really just it is what it says. It's telling you how many strokes the boat has taken every minute, and it really has. It really tells a lot, you know, with how much effort people are having to put in to travel distances or the time they go, but A lot of times, as far as your strategy, it'll be based around, you know, how many strokes a minute you want to be at certain points of the race.
How much practice do the teams put in, AJ, so they can coordinate their strokes so smoothly?
As much as they can get. It's really amazing to hear some of the stories of, you know, public high school teams that only get to practice three times a week or something like that. And then you've got other teams who are, you know, larger club programs that can practice as many as five times a week. So it really varies by program. But like I said, I know they try to get on the water as much as they can, including when they come to these events. I know every time we'll be able to offer a practice session, there'll be hundreds of boats on the water at those points too. So, you know, they don't just stop practicing when they come to these events. They utilize every available practice minute that they can get.
Now, is it a case of the fastest boat wins, the one who crosses the finish line first wins? Is there a point or a penalty system that's in place here, AJ? How exactly does this work when you're trying to determine who wins and loses at these championships?
For the most part, it's whoever crosses the line first wins. This event has time trials at two different parts of it, so that one it's a little harder to tell because you're looking for who has the best time down the course. But every other time, when you're talking about just general sprint racing, we all start together, and whoever crosses the line first is the winner.
Lily, you said you were at the Masters level. How long did it take you to reach that? How long have you been rowing?
Well, we got kind of sucked into this when our son started rowing in 2003. Then my husband and I started running these regattas, and then we decided we should get in a boat because, you know, here we are running these regattas and we should try it out.
Try it yourself.
So, we started probably around 2006 or 2007. He and I rowed together. We have competed together. We have the goal of staying upright and dry and not finishing last. And so far we have accomplished that. So
are there a lot of families like yours that are involved in this kind of a family kind of sport? At these regattas?
Oh yeah. Lots and lots and lots. You know, the parents come, especially in high school, they bring tents and they bring all the supplies and they cook for the kids and, you know, they take care of them and there's, you know, tent moms and, you know, they're doing everything for the kids and the kids all just have to like show up and row and then they lay in little puppy piles and, you know, keeping warm and dry and, you know, it's a big collective sport.
AJ, how good of a spectator sport is rowing?
We're getting better and better at it. U.S. Rowing, a couple of years ago, we started live streaming our events and that has made a huge difference because rowing is one of those sports where, you know, we don't have a nice stadium that you can just sit in and every seat's a great seat. You kind of have to work with the surroundings you have. So, you know, some of the venues like Harsha, it's hard to see the beginning of the race. Well, now with our streaming video, people can see the entire race start to finish. And it's actually very funny to watch. You'll see people watching the TV that we have on site. And then as soon as you see the boats come into view, they run to the shore to watch it in person. So you almost have to keep a clearing between the TV and the shore just so no one gets run over. But, you know, we've been working on things like that to make it more spectator friendly. And I think, with things like drones and the new camera technologies that they're coming out with seemingly quicker and quicker every year, those things will only help make the sport more easily viewable.
Lila, are there any athletes or teams from the Cincinnati area who are competing in this?
Yes, there are. Cincinnati Juniors will have boats. The Cincinnati Rowing Club, which is the Masters branch of the Cincinnati Juniors, has entries, and Clermont Crew has entries.
And what are your tips for watching a race? If this is the first time you've ever watched rowing, what should you be looking for?
I would say, you know, watch the end. The end is the most exciting when all the boats are coming to the end and, you know, they're neck and neck and, you know, they're charging to the end and the coxswains are yelling and the boats make the coolest sound when they're all together and they're swishing through the water. So yeah, I would be at the finish and cheering them on.
AJ, what are your tips for first timers who are watching rowing? What should they be looking for?
Yeah, really, we like to tell people, the crew that's making it look the easiest is probably doing the best. So it's really, just like Lila said, it can be a very exciting sport. But it's also very harmonious and very peaceful. And, you know, a crew is together and they're just, you know, running and all together and everything. It's really a beautiful sport to watch as well. So mm-hmm. you've got the excitement and the beauty mixed together. It's really, really great to watch.
Jim, what about you? What advice would you have for somebody who's a first timer watching this sport?
I would say get there early. I think we're going to have a significant number of people, and it is amazing to watch the finish of these athletes working in with such teamwork.
Well, Jim, Leela, and AJ, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
AJ Dominic, U.S. Rowing Events Manager, Jim Kamadeka, Board Chair of the Claremont Convention and Visitors Bureau and co-owner of Green Kayak Adventures, and Leela Spriggs, Events Director with the Claremont County Convention and Visitors Bureau. The 2015 U.S. Rowing Club National Championships begins this Wednesday, July 15th at Harsha Lake in Claremont County. You can find more information on the WVXU.org website.